time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 672 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Michael Morrissey from the Awakened graphic novel at Zoop.gg, along with the holiday tradition. Michael and I talk about this timely original graphic novel from him, Alex Segura, and Dave Kotz. The series is described this way. The Awakened is a character-driven superhero epic in the vein of the Golden Age, Supreme Power, Black Hammer, and Astro City. It is collected here in trade paperback format for the first time. We discuss how this book came to be, what else Michael is working on, and the importance of this story for today's world. This Zoop.gg crowdfunding project will be concluding in early January of 2025. But don't wait. Be sure to back this excellent project as soon as you finish listening to our great interview. Then everything wraps up with my annual holiday tradition, playing the audio from 'Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas. Don't miss next week's episode as we wrap up 2024 with another terrific conversation with another great comics professional. I'm sure you're going to enjoy everything this week. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. The Awakened is a dark, noirish superhero murder mystery that explores what the true definition of power is, and who should wield it. Welcome to a world very much like our own, populated by a small handful of super beings. The series focuses on a government-sanctioned team of superheroes, the Freedom Alliance, and their beloved leader, Paragon. Though everything seems to be just fine from the outside, the man behind Paragon's mask realizes there are dark forces moving against him, his team, and the world itself. What does it have to do with the disappearance of the insanely powerful being known as Avatar? And I'm talking today with one of the creators, Michael Morrissey. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well. How are you, Wayne?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Let's see. Now, as we're speaking, there's some business going on that we have to pay attention to as to when this program starts at Zoop.gg. But right now, as we're recording this, that's a little up in the air. But the way to get notified about this is if you go to Zoop.gg and if you go to the Awakened page, if I understand how these things go, it should be at Zoop.gg/seasoncat/The Awakened, and you should be able to sign up to receive notification when it starts. Now, if it has started by the time you're listening to this, it'll probably take you directly to the Zoop.gg page. So be sure to pay attention to that. We want to make sure we get everybody in the right place. So, Michael, why don't you go? You've got a co-creator on this. A couple co-creators, Alex Segura and the artist, too. All three of you folks created this book?
That's correct, yeah. Dean Kotz, Alex Segura, who I co-wrote it with, and myself.
Okay. So how did this come to be?
Well, Alex and I have been working together for a while. We've been friends for a while. We just kind of met, you know, on the con circuit. And he, you know, he at the time, when we first became friends, was the editor at Archie Comics. And I worked there for a bit with him as well. And we wanted to get we wanted to do a superhero book that crossed, you know, vectors with the types of stories that we really like, specifically crime noir. And we were kicking around something actually at Archie, as a matter of fact, trying to get something off the ground there. And for a few reasons, it just never came together. And we had this idea that went on the shelf for a while. And you know, we kind of worked on it sporadically here and there till eventually we decided to put it into gear. We got Dean involved, Dean Kotz, who's just a absolutely terrific, terrific artist. We got him involved and, you know, more or less made a run at getting it published. Around this time, a small, not small, I shouldn't say small, a new publisher was making a headway, Zest World, an online comic, sort of like in the vein of like how, you know, I guess, you know, Substack was for a while. There was that moment where a few places were trying to get, were trying to do comics and trying to build, you know, email lists to, you know, publish and support them. I think they're all gone at this point. But we connected with them. They wanted to get behind it and produce it, all five issues. So we did. And they did. All five issues have come out through Zest World. And now we are, for the first time ever, putting it in print with Zoop, putting out the trade collected edition, all in one nice, nifty little book.
Okay, I got to ask, why is it called The Awakened?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that Alex and I kind of wanted to toy with in terms of like toying with the themes and the ideas of the book. You know, the superhero team are not named that, but they're the Freedom Alliance. But it's about certain characters having an awakening in their lives and how that transforms and how that changes them and you know, dictates the things that they are ultimately going to do in this story.
Okay. Now, you know, when it comes to comics and superheroes, there's often, shall we say, sort of icons that we get, you know, and 'cause I'm a DC guy, I look at like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman kind of stuff. And I'm sort of curious as to the characters kind of, some of them seem to follow some of those iconic roles, but other ones are a little different. Would you talk a little bit about the characters and the roles they play in the team?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously, when you do a superhero comic, and you being such a fan, I'm sure you know what I mean. Like, it's inescapable, you can say, to not acknowledge, you know, Marvel, DC, you know, superhero comics, at least superhero comics as we know them, are built on those two publishers. Now, obviously, you know, and I know, I'm sure many people listening know that superhero comics, the history and birth and origins are deeper and richer than that. But as we know them, you know, modern day, superhero comics are more or less defined by Marvel, DC superhero iconography and superhero tropes, so to speak. So we wanted to be cognizant of that and say, okay, you know, we're not going to try. And I think this is where a lot of publishers ultimately stumble when they, you know, you see these publishers, you know, every couple of years they're going to start a new superhero universe and the all new this or the all new that. And trying to do something that's not Marvel, DC, and I feel like it's I don't know, to me it's kind of a foolish endeavor. You know, it'd be like starting a baseball league and not acknowledging that Major League Baseball exists, you know, or starting a basketball league and, you know, not saying, you know, the NBA is there. You know, of course it's there, and it's the dominant force in that culture, right? So when we made The Awakened, we wanted to do what some of our favorite creators have done when they played in the superhero universe. Like, for instance, Kurt Busiek in Astro City, or, you know, of course, you know, Alan Moore in many things, The Watchmen in particular, and acknowledge what superheroes are, acknowledge the legend and mythology that Marvel and DC has created, the iconography of what superheroes are, how they look like, et cetera. And, you know, kind of play with that in what we hope are, you know, fresh and interesting ways. You know, we're not trying to break it, you know, and we're not trying to create something totally new in the sense that it's separate or, you know, new in the sense that, like, it can be totally divorced from Marvel DC, which I don't believe you can do. They're just too much of a presence. So it's more about just like keeping those ideas in mind and creating something fresh and interesting. And you see that in The Awakened. You know, characters are, you know, influenced by, you know, Spectre. Some characters are influenced by Captain America, so on and so forth. You know, that you do have an acknowledgement of the iconography, but they're certainly not the same. They're still their own characters. They're still their own ideas, but you have that, you know, cross-pollinization. It's like, yeah, this is like Captain America, but it's different. This is like Spectre, but it's different in this way. And I think that makes it a rich experience for the people who know these stories and know these characters and know this mythology, while also, like I said, presenting them in a little bit of a new and different and interesting way. And that was our primary goal.
Uh-huh. The book itself starts off really interestingly. The one of the regular people actually kind of enters. It says, nothing in the world could have prepared this person for what she found in Ted Riley's apartment. And, of course, I don't think I'm spoiling much by going on the first page. And there is Ted on the ground covered with blood in a superhero costume. We don't see that very much in comics, I have to say. So that, to me, was kind of an interesting start for things. Do you want to talk about why you started that way?
Yeah, no, that's definitely an opener, you know. and that was definitely intentional. I mean, obviously, we are playing a little bit with, you know, the Watchmen, who had the famous, you know, iconic death of a hero. Death of a superhero opening that, you know, led to Rorschach and led to the investigation and so on and so forth. But like, again, like we're doing this thing that's like, yeah, this is a superhero gets killed. You know, how do you not acknowledge the Watchmen? It's like, okay, well, let's acknowledge it, but do it in a different way. Cause we go back and we flash from there and we actually see Ted alive. He's like our, more or less our Captain America figure. We see Ted alive and we see him, you know, interacting, and he's not, you know, a villainous superhero. He is actually a good superhero. He's a pure of heart guy, a noble guy. So the question then becomes, you know, why would anybody kill him? Why would anybody want him dead? And that's part, a large part of what the book is about and what's, you know, initially driving the narrative and driving the mystery. So, you know, we wanted to start with something grabbing, something, I don't say shocking. I don't know if our intention was to shock, but just something that's interesting and grabbing you. And, you know, like I said, you know, it's like those, you know, readers would be like, ooh, wow, it's like Watchmen, but where's this going to go? And how's it going to be different? And how's it going to be in its own thing? And I think we made that. We made our own version of the superhero murder mystery. And it goes from there, like, you know, where you have Lana developing into her own character and how this, you know, how this death affects her and where it takes her life and where, how that helps form a new idea of a superhero, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the characters. Of course, I'm a Batman guy, so the one that appealed to me the most was Grey Wolf.
Yes. Yes. Very much a Batman guy. There's no denying, our influence there. And, you know, Alex and I are having fun. You know, it's funny, at the time of when we were writing this, neither one of us, I had written at Marvel and DC like here and there. I don't think Alex had at the time, but, you know, but now Alex is writing at Marvel and I think DC as well. Yeah. He's writing at DC too. He's writing pretty regularly, but we were kind of like, you know, in our minds, we're like, well, they're never going to let us play with the toys, you know, Marvel and DC. Like, we're just not, you know, we're just not getting these opportunities. So we just wanted to get a chance to, you know, if you can't play with the toys, you know, make your own toys. And that's part of what we're doing and being big, big Marvel and DC fans, just making the toys ourselves and having fun with that. And that is the Batman guy. And like I said, Paragon is the Captain America guy. And there's the Spectre character, you know, all the characters, not all, but some of the characters that we love, we found a way to squeeze in there. But Grey Wolf is definitely the vigilante crime solving guy. That's clearly, clearly a Batman, inspired by Batman, we'll say.
Well, there's a lot of diversity in this book, too, more than, say, other companies might have. Like Forza is obviously a Hispanic, got a Hispanic name. Do you want to talk about her a little bit?
I'm sorry, I missed who you said.
Forza.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, it's always weird. Diversity is important to Alex and I both. Like, we're very much, you know, creators who believe in the importance of that. At the same time, we try to be cautious of it because we don't want to be, you know, I feel like I never want to be the person that that like tokenizes it, you know, and puts diversity in for the sake of diversity, because there's something, in my opinion, something a little bit cynical about that. So we wanted it to be always authentic. You know, Lana was a character, Lana Cortez, who ultimately, you know, I don't think this spoils anything if you read or know much about it, you know, is ultimately the protagonist of the book, becomes the protagonist through interesting circumstances. And, you know, part of it, again, is like, you know, Alex and I wanting to play with these tropes. And we wanted to create something in a way we hadn't seen. Like, what would it be like for a different person to step into this role and not the same type of person that we've seen, you know, time and time again? And if we do that, you know, how can we really do something with this perspective rather than, again, you know, going back to this, you know, rather than tokenize it and just do it for the sake of doing it, really have it be something genuine. And that meant a lot to both Alex and to me. And I hope that we handled it with, I don't know, the suitable attention and care that it should be handled with.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the Spectre-like character, and that's Madame Frightful.
Right.
she's kind of, I like her stuff is pretty good. She has a little bit of Spectre and some other elements, of course, involved with it too. So I like her character quite a bit. And there's, as we say, not only diversity as far as like racial components, but also male, female, quite a lot of diversity along those lines as well. So I there's a whole lot of interesting, the great big brutish kind of guy. What's his name?
Oh, he's like our kind of like our thing. He's oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank? God, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank here. He's Rage, but he's I can't remember his like real name, his actual name. But anyway, we'll just call him his superhero name is Rage.
Yeah,
and I think we do interesting things with him too. We didn't want to be also, you know, tip the scales in that direction. We're like, oh, you know, the big white guy is clearly the villain, you know, like, or he's clearly the bad guy. He's actually has an interesting point of view in my mind. Like, maybe not always, not all readers would agree with him. I don't always agree with him. But we also wanted to give him his do and make him honest and say and have him be a believable guy that's like, yeah, maybe his opinions are a little bit different from what we see normally in comics, but that's okay. It's okay to have people with different viewpoints, and maybe ultimately you kind of end up seeing a little bit from his side, and it makes the story a little richer. It makes his character a little richer too. You know, if you don't have everybody just agreeing to the same thing, you can kind of get a little bit more of not just diversity, like we're talking about, of character and diversity of race and gender, but diversity of ideas as well is important.
Uh-huh. Now, of course, one of the characters that's not there when the things open up is Avatar. And he's kind of an avatar himself, as far as superheroes go. He's not there, and he, they're wondering where he is when things are all opening. I thought that was an interesting thing to take him out of the mix at the very beginning, which I kind of liked. On some levels, he reminded me a little bit of Dr. Midnight, because he was, Dr. Midnight was there sometimes and not there sometimes, and Avatar sort of shows up, and things start to move a little differently when he shows up. So Avatar is kind of a Superman.
Yeah, I think you could say that. I think there's a little bit of a, you know, what we wanted to do was have a little bit of a character who, you know, I always thought that if this
if this character, a Superman or a Dr. Manhattan or some, you know, extraterrestrial being came to Earth and was ostensibly a superhero, like, what would that really be like? How would we, how could we possibly comprehend another being, a person, whatever you want to say, that not only is not terrestrial, you know, not from, at least not from this planet, but is also, you know, superpowered? Like, how do regular people could possibly, you know, understand who they are and what they want and what they understand and don't understand? And I thought that was really an interesting idea we want to do with Avatar, is to make him a cipher. You know, like, we don't really know what he ultimately wants or why he came, or in this case, you know, why he left. And I kind of enjoyed being able to use that mystery. You know, we have the mystery of the murder, obviously, but there's also the mystery of, like, who is this person? Who is this, you know, so-called hero, and what do they want, and what are they going to do? What are their intentions for Earth and for this team and whatever else? I think it just kind of adds an element to it that we don't often see. You know, we just kind of accept things at face value, you know, in comics, that, like, you know, oh, you know, this so-and-so crashed on Earth and now they're here to protect us. It's like, yeah, why? You know, like, you know, what do they want, and what are they getting from this, or what are their ultimate plans? You know, if it's just total selflessness, okay, that's fine. But, like, maybe not, you know, maybe it's more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Superman is always the hardest character to write, I think, because he's always going to make the moral choice. And yeah. There's very, you know, so we basically know what he's going to do. Batman, I have no idea what he's going to do, because he's not going to necessarily make the moral choice. So I like that character because I'm not sure what he's going to do. But Superman, I think recently they've got a better handle on him than they had in the past, where he kind of just, you know, he was always, you know, what made him Superman was not his powers. It was his moral compass. And I think they've moved a little bit away from that and kind of made it a little more challenging for him. Because I thought Avatar was actually a pretty good thing, that because he's more ambiguous and because we don't exactly understand what his goals and ideas are, I found him a lot more interesting than Superman has been.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I yeah, I wish there was more of that in superhero comics. I think we also, you know, all too much, you know, live in this dichotomy where it's like either, like, you know, Superman, you know, the super, you know, purity, or like the boys, where it's like this super decadence, you know? Yeah. You know, it's like, but, and they try to do it. They try to say, like, well, you know, like a Wolverine or Deadpool, but Wolverine is just grumpy about what he has to do. Like, he's ultimately always going to do the right thing. You know, there's really not a lot of moral ambiguity with him. Deadpool 2 is, he's just self-aware and funny. You know, there's really there's a dearth of, like, moral complexity of, like, yeah, sometimes I do have to kill this guy. You know, you think about, like, you know, Batman or Superman, like, Batman's, you know, rule of no killing is sort of in one way an immoral rule, you know, because every time he lets the Joker live, that's 10 more people that Joker's going to kill the next time he rampages.
Right.
You kill him once and that's it. You've saved however many lives. Mm-hmm. You let him live. Well, now you're putting more people, you know, it's like, I know this gets into almost like death penalty type, you know, moral quandaries, but, like, there is something to be said about, like, if you had a superhero who wasn't always, you know, killing and murdering, like, you know, what's his name from The Boys, the Butcher, or, you know, whatever, you have him, or if you had Superman, who's always, you know, doing this impossibly, you know, righteous thing, someone between us just, like, you know, this person has terrorized us enough. They just have to go. Mm-hmm. And then have to live with that decision. Then you make a comic about, the ramifications of that decision. You know, we only have the decision of, like, oh, well, I have to deal with the ramifications of always doing the right thing. But it's like, what if you did the wrong thing once in a while, or, you know, the quote unquote wrong thing? Now it's like, well, I killed the Joker. Now I have to live with that. Like, well, what does that mean? We don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to ask you, of course, you know, you've been talking about, like, dealing with superheroes and stuff like that. You guys, in order to do this book, had to create your own set of superheroes. What was that like? Because, you know, superheroes started back in the 1940s, and there have been so many of them, and I enjoy so many of the groups and like many of the characters, that it must have been a challenge to come up with basically new or at least differently named characters. How did you guys approach that?
That's a really good question. I mean, like, it definitely was challenging to, like, how do you make this new enough, but not also be the same old, you know? And it was tough. I mean, like you said, you know, there's characters like, for instance, you know, Rage, who I mentioned, who was like, well, what if we made this kind of, you know, be frank, this right wing-ish type, you know, muscle bound guy, but make him interesting, you know, make him have a little bit more complexities that we don't expect, you know, just turn the dial just a little bit, you know, off center from what our expectations might be and what we've seen, you know. Swift, you know, you have the speedster, but Swift's got some own agendas of her own that's a little bit different, you know. You know, even making you know, Victory, our new hero, it's like, okay, well, let's just not make a new, you know, the way Captain America's, you know, torch got, you know, handed off here and there. You know, let's make it a different passing of the torch where she, you know, is getting the torch from Paragon, from Ted. And she's saying, yes, this is who Ted was. And this is what Ted stood for. But Ted also did things wrong and Ted got things wrong. And I'm going to do things differently. You know, that being part of her character, you know, again, the awakening thing of being awakened to, like, the stuff that came before me is not all bad and it's not all good. So I need to learn both and be able to separate the two, you know, like, that's the way generational growth and, you know, happens. You know, I think people, you know, you have so much, you may have skinning in the weeds a little bit on social media, so much of this, like, finger pointing and how, like, you know, calling old generations of how they got things wrong with, you know, you're whistling past the cemetery gates because the next generation is going to come and say, well, we got wrong. And that's part of it. That's part of how you learn, but not acknowledging that you yourself are going to get something wrong, is a dangerous place to be, you know? So I think that's part of what we have in Victory is, like, Ted did things right. You know, it's okay to admit that people are flawed and they did things right and they did things wrong. And there's a balance there, but I'm going to try to improve on that. And the only way you can improve is acknowledging the strengths and the weaknesses and acknowledging in yourself that you have strengths and weaknesses and how do I do best with them and not just, like, say, you know, look at these things are bad and, you know, torment others for their bad, but also try to do more than punish them, you know, learn from the mistakes of others and grow and, you know, acknowledge that within yourself and grow. And that was a big part of what we want to do with Victory. And I think that's part of, you know, I don't want to say all the characters, because we just didn't have enough time to, like, give all the characters, the hero team their due in this book. But I feel like that's something that's, like, threading through is, like, at some point you have to be your own person. At some point you have to learn and change. And that's something that we, Alex and I were both, you know, cognizant of and wanted to really pay attention to in this book.
Well, I have to say, I enjoyed the evolution of Victory. And since you mentioned her name, I wasn't sure whether we could talk about her or not. But it was fun to see a character come into her own, or basically evolve and be start out not being a superhero. And when she becomes a superhero, what does she do as a superhero? Because she didn't expect to be one. So I thought that evolution, I thought, was really interesting. I really liked that quite a lot.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. I like that whole, you know, having the, you know, the reluctant hero, you know, who, you know, doesn't just come to being a hero. Like, she's reluctant, sure, but she doesn't come to just being a hero and just, like, you know what? Her journey's not just deciding to be a hero. It's deciding what hero she wants, what kind of hero she wants to be. And that's the thing that I think both Alex and I found most interesting.
Now, I got to ask, of course, I was given a preview of the book, and so I know how the mystery is going to be solved, but I'm not going to anyway solve it. The question I have for you, though, is when you guys made the characters, did you know when you developed them who was going to be the antagonist, shall we say?
Yes, we did. We didn't know. There's one character that we tweaked along the way, and I don't want to spoil it, but, there was one character that we tweaked along the way that we were like, you know, let's take this, let's zig, you know, where we're going to zag and have them be involved and surprise us as well. And, you know, have make that a little bit more interesting. So we did know the main antagonist, but we didn't know where one character was going to go.
Interesting. Did the character write his or herself, or did something come up that made you guys take that character in a certain direction?
I think it's, you know, I think really that was an Alex decision. I think what Alex is very, very good at, he's good at a lot of things as a writer, but what one of the things he's really good at is he has such a good mystery background. You know, he's written mystery novels, and he knows so much about crime noir and things like that, that he's able to really do well with making plots, especially murder plots, surprising and giving them depth. And I think that's the way he's always looking to find ways to give those types of stories a little bit more depth, a little bit more something that'll make it surprising and unexpected. And I think that's where he found it. And I think that it was a great call. I think it was a really good call because I think it made the book all the more interesting.
Surprised me, I have to say.
Oh, good.
I was shocked when I saw what was going on behind the scenes. I mean, who did the dirty work and what else was going on? It surprised me very much. So I like that because one of the things that I find in many comics is I don't get surprised. And I love to be surprised because, you know, bad news is I'm an experienced comics reader. And many times I see the clues coming before the thing happens, but this one I didn't. And so I was very happy to get a nice surprise when we find out what's all going on. So I wanted to tell you that was a great way to write that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. And like I said, Alex is just, he excels at that. Alex always excels. I mean, he's such a talented writer. And, helped make some interesting decisions that, like you said, I think that's part of the biggest thing is like surprising readers and being able to do something that hasn't been seen before, because that's, you know, it's not very common, you know, especially like if your readers like you or readers like me, like we've seen, what haven't we seen, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true. And so I really like it when something good doesn't go the way I expect. Now, does it come out of left field and I don't see anywhere where it came from? No, I don't like that. I don't like if somebody does magic and they paint themselves into a corner and suddenly they find, well, there's this magic trick that I never use. I'm going to have to use it here. And I'm like, I want something that makes sense. You know, I want foreshadowing. I want things to make sense. And this makes a lot of sense, thankfully, which I really like. Which, of course, leads to a question. Okay, The Awakened, the first volume is together. Assuming that this is a success, and I'm pretty safe, I feel like saying that, is there any more storytelling left in The Awakened that you guys might want to pursue after this comes out?
Absolutely, yeah. Alex and I have talked a lot about this. It's been a long gestating process for us, making it and releasing it, and just going from start to finish. We've been in this world for a few years now. So we do have a lot of other ideas that we'd like to explore and where we like to take this team and the characters as individuals from this point forward. There still are mysteries left undone, especially, you know, or left that are not concluded, especially with Avatar. So there are definitely places that we can take it and we'd like to take it. It's just all a matter of getting the opportunity.
Well, I can real. Now, I did want to comment a little bit about the art style, because usually superhero comics are extremely structured, shall we say. This one is a little more, his art style is a little more unstructured. There's a little bit, like a little bit of fragmenting to it that makes it interesting. It's not as defined as many superhero comics are, which I thought matched the story really well. I thought that was pretty good. It also made when they punch each other, it hurt.
Right.
Ow. I mean, there's Victory at one point punches somebody, and I literally went, ow, when I saw that. And so I think the art really does help the story quite a lot. And I thought it was a great choice to bring in Dean and do the stuff that he did that wasn't quite standard superhero stuff, which I liked.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. And I couldn't agree more. I think you nail on the head. Not only do we think that Dean is a really, really talented craftsman, but also like he brought this style, this edgy style that, again, like you said, was a perfect marriage, with the book itself. So it was definitely a no brainer to collaborate with him. And he's a great artist and a really great guy and hardworking. So we were lucky to be able to collaborate with him. And he was, there's just those artists that sometimes just fit. And I think this is one of those times he's an absolute perfect fit.
Okay, I got to put my druthers in for a Grey Wolf miniseries. I want to see that somewhere because I like that character.
I do too. I'm with you.
I like that stuff. So, okay, so this is going to be out. This again, go to zoop.gg for more information on this as it becomes available, as they say. Now, Michael, what else are you working on that we should be aware of?
That's a good question. I've got a Star Wars series coming out starting in January. The Bad Batch, miniseries. It's the first time ever that the Bad Batch are in a miniseries, are in their own comic miniseries. I wrote the first time they were in a comic, ever, which was pretty cool. I love the Bad Batch. So now we're taking them to a miniseries that's coming out through Dark Horse starting in January, 5 issues on that. Alex and I together write the new Dick Tracy series with Mad Cave, our first volume. The trade paperback comes out this month. If you're listening in November, rather, so just in time for the holidays. And then we have the new volume. Actually, before the new volume comes, we have a one shot that's a Valentine's Day special. That's going to be really fun. Then we have a new volume coming out after that, volume 2. So that's continuing to go along, and it's about it. I have my own podcast. If anyone wants to listen, the Filmographers Podcast, it's my movie obsessiveness takes over. My friend Keir and I, host a show where we watch an entire director's filmography, one film at a time. We're nearly done with our first season where we covered, Steven Soderbergh. We've been watching all his wonderful movies and studying his career. It's been a lot of fun. Oh God. One last thing. Sorry. I have a movie that I co-directed and wrote called, Holiday Holdup. And, it's a crime caper, fun movie. That's, again, perfect for the holidays. It's available. You can rent it on Prime. You can get it on Tubi. You can get it. It's going to be on Peacock soon. It's going to be on Hulu soon. And it's on Pluto. So lots of options for that. That's available lots of places. Holiday Holdup. So, yeah, check that out, please.
Okay. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
That's a good question. So it's I am on Twitter at Michael Morisi and on Instagram at Michael Morisi. Yeah, very simple.
Now, you've done other comics in the past, too. But before I let you go, I think you did stuff for Vault, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The only reason I didn't mention, Barbaric, which is my kind of flagship series over there. We're in between arcs right now, but we have a new one of that coming as well. That's the one we just had a trade paperback release last month, Born in Blood. That was volume 4. We have big plans for 5. And, that's just going to be steamrolling ahead. I've also done Wasted Space over there. And you can get that all 5 volumes are out. You can get all in one big hardcover, which I believe is available through the Vault website. And I think it's on Amazon as well. I'm pretty sure.
All right. Well, much success with The Awakened on Zoop.gg. Looking forward to that, and hopefully more in the Awakened verse or whatever you want to call it after that. But much success with that. And, keep up the good stuff, Michael.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And you keep up the good stuff as well. Keep the show going. And hopefully we talk again soon.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And now it's time for my yearly holiday tradition, the playing of 'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas. This video is actually available on YouTube. If you go to that site and look up 'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas, you'll find it there. It's from the folks who do I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC kind of videos, and there are plenty of them. I think this is one of their first ones. What you really need to know is that there are three voices. The first one is Alfred, second one, of course, is Batman, and the third one is Santa Claus. And it has an interesting holiday message that I like to communicate. So without any further ado, 'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung, and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late, on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all, ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me, watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
I say, sir,
I pleaded with all of my might,
Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?
I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,
he answered each year.
You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here.
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
Merry Christmas,
I said. His reply was,
good night.
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly, a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
Who are you?
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
Ho, ho, ho! Don't you know?
He asked, giving his heels a click.
Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick!
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham.
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he'd left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
I've come here in peace,
said the man.
Have no fear,
Batman said.
Then explain to me why you've come here.
The jolly man laughed.
Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best.
I need and want nothing from you,
Batman said.
Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled.
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear.
Bruce said,
hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do. Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?
Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack, but the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack. Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say.
I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time.
Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt. Allowing others in. Let your defenses melt.
My defenses are fine.
Batman furrowed his brow.
It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give. I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so, now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow, I exclaimed in the dark.
Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
"Thanks, Clark."
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
"Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight."
May you enjoy whatever holidays you celebrate this year. So happy holidays. I'll be back next week with more interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.